I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Hardwood Knox Podcast. My name is Dan Favalli, coming at you with my super-duper, incredibly esteemed, awesome times awesome, fantabulous, spectaculario, officially now the big analytic co-host, Andrew D. Bailey. Before we get started, hopping into just some recent NBA happenings, getting off of our holiday hiatus where we took more than a minute off, I just want to remind, beg, plead, implore everyone to continue rating, reviewing, and subscribing to us on iTunes. It is the best way for you to continue helping the podcast. Please just take the 10 to 15 seconds out of your day, search Hardwood Knox on iTunes, throw us a 5-star rating, write a review, subscribe if you haven't already, recommend us to friends, family, enemies, frenemies, randos on the street. We appreciate it all. You can also find us wherever else you consume your audio listening thingy majiggies. With that said, and that out of the way, we get to some recent NBA stuffs. But first, we do have to ask Andy, how are you doing in the year 2019?
Doing great. Excited to be back on the podcast. Like you said, it's been a little bit for us, and I guess we've had some news that has taken place since our last episode, especially yesterday.
Yes, we had. We should probably start there. I did not. It's just, we talked about it. Tom Thibodeau was fired, reported by John Krasinski of The Athletic, along with Shams Charania, his colleague at The Athletic, and then Woj, of course, coming in with the news as well. They all had a bunch of different stuff from it. But from what it sounds like is that after the Minnesota Timberwolves blew out the Los Angeles Lakers, they walked into Tom Thibodeau's office and they fired him, coach and president, Tom Thibodeau. And it seems that there were a lot of factors. We know his days were really numbered from the Jimmy Butler saga, from the Jimmy Butler tour de force. But I always thought that they would just give him the season before making a decision, since they probably weren't going to make the playoffs this year anyway. And I know that they're not terribly far out of the race as it stands, but it's just really hard to make. If you're 11th in the West, that's fine. But there are just so many other teams vying for position right now. And so, yes, they're two games out of the playoffs, but that just feels like a mountain when you have teams like the Jazz still out of the playoffs. The Lakers are at 8th, and they haven't had LeBron for a minute. The Mavericks are in 13th. The Pelicans are in 14th, and they're only no more than three games out. So it seems like this decision was made at least in part because season ticket renewals might have been coming up or something like that. But I'm just curious as to what you make of the timing of it.
Yeah, the timing was weird. I think you and I have speculated about Thibodeau's job security at various points over the last year or so. And I think both of us kind of came to the conclusion that he would probably see out the rest of the year. Right now, going back to your point about them making the playoffs, 538 has them at a 26% chance of making the playoffs. So I'm not sure switching to an interim coach in January 6th, 7th, whatever it is going to vault you into the playoffs. I don't even know if that's their end game. Maybe there was just enough tension between the front office and Thibodeau for, I mean, I guess technically he is the front office, but maybe there was enough tension between him and the higher ups over the last couple weeks that it just didn't even matter what they were doing right now. They just want to full stop, move on to something else. And I can understand it. I don't think he's a coach that I think the game has sort of passed by over the last few years in some ways. So I understand why they maybe want to go in a different direction. But like you said, the timing is definitely weird.
And it's not like, relative to what could have happened after the Jimmy Butler trade, they haven't been awful. They are 15-12.
They've been better since Butler.
Yeah, they're 15-12 since the Jimmy Butler trade. Their offense was 11th in points scored per 100 possessions. Their defense was 10th. So their net rating plus 4 points per 100 possessions. Andrew Wiggins was playing a little bit better, I feel like, over the past couple games. Derrick Rose, while he's been on the sidelines recently, has wedged his way into the Sixth Man of the Year conversation, and some of his Rose buds will probably give him MVP votes on Twitter as well if they need to. I'm just looking at a reason since then that they would get rid of him. Is it not playing Dario Saric enough, you know, still giving more minutes to Taj Gibson, not giving enough consistent minutes to Josh Okogie? I honestly do not know. They must have just had this in their heads and decided that we need to do this now. And maybe they recognize that fighting for the 10th or 11th seed in the West, just to say you were within close proximity to the playoffs, wasn't worth it.
Yeah, it's hard to think of a reason since the Butler trade, because they have been better. Another guy who's been better since Butler left is Karl Anthony Towns.
Who's that?
What's that?
Who's that?
I thought I'd cut out again or something. Yeah, I mean, he's been great for the last few weeks. Like you said, Derrick Rose has been good. And I think the last time I looked this lineup up, when Robert Covington, who came over in that trade for Jimmy Butler, has been on the floor with Karl Anthony Towns, the Timberwolves have been really, really good. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're just kind of circling around it at this point. There's just hard to figure out why they would do it now, not necessarily hard to figure out why they would do it in general, but it's odd. Do you think that this is the start of maybe a domino effect? Is there anybody else that's going to be on the move? I mean, I posed the question last night on Twitter. Do you think anybody would even take a shot at Andrew Wiggins' deal? I can't imagine Lawal Dang will be there much longer. They cut James Nunnally yesterday. I wonder if there will be any more turnover with the Wolves. I don't even know if it's possible, because I think your laugh after the Andrew Wiggins question is appropriate. I don't know who would trade for him at this point.
I got nothing for you. Maybe if the Grizzlies kind of thought that if they were getting off the Chandler Parsons deal. Nice little segue there, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know. The Andrew Wiggins deal, it just feels like it goes – his contract is going to come off the books before Anthony Davis's, and it still feels like his goes on forever for some reason. He is owed, this is a number everyone knows, but including this year, 5 years, $147.7 million. I don't know who's taking a chance on that. I don't even, if I'm the Grizzlies, I'm not trading. I wouldn't trade Chandler Parsons for Andrew Wiggins straight up right now. And that's not to say that Andrew Wiggins won't get better, but that contract, that's the next half decade of eating up between, let's say, 20 and maybe 25% of your cap, assuming all these progressions. That just hamstrings you for so long if he doesn't pan out. What's that?
When I posed that on Twitter, Micah Adams, he used to write for ESPN. I don't know if he's still there, but he suggested Charlotte if you could get off of like Batum's deal.
That'd be interesting.
I mean, it's same sort of.
Do you have time for a quick Nicholas Batum anecdote?
Yes, let's hear it.
I was writing trades about trades last week, and so I came up with a Batum trade because he was in the rumor mill, and it was whether or not, I'm not even going to go through it because it was a complicated three teamer, but he ended up on the Spurs, who also wound up getting two picks and off of Pau Gasol's deal. And Spurs fans, some of them came at me on Twitter because I said within the article that San Antonio is cozying up to mediocrity and they need to decide whether they want to continue to go for it or if they want to hit reset. And this deal was obviously them kind of going for it while also picking up, you know, maybe it's a late first rounder and maybe it's an early second rounder, but those are the picks that they as a franchise have hit on in the past. And they were just like, the Spurs aren't mediocre. They're clearly great. Have you seen what they've done? And my point is, we know they're first in net rating since December 1st. We know their defense has been better during that time. We know that their offense has been really good during that time. The Spurs are not a great team. And I picked them to make the playoffs, and I'm not going to move off that just because I like to be wrong and stick to my morals when I am wrong. But the Spurs are their road record is still a problem. They've won some of those big games when the teams had injuries. You look at the Raptors didn't have Kyle Lowry. The Nuggets were banged up when they beat them one of those times. So I think we need to get off the boat of the Spurs are this serious threat in the Western Conference. Will they make the playoffs? I still think they will. But they are 6 games over .500, and it's funny how some Spurs fans still think that they're like this championship contender. And I just don't think we can pencil them in to that box, no matter how closely contested the West is. I'm sorry, but I was dealing with that fallout. I think it was like Friday night or something. And I just found it absolutely hysterical that they weren't mad. I didn't call the Spurs bad. I said that they were cozying up to mediocrity, and that set them off.
I think that's a fair assessment. They have been really good for the last few weeks, but I don't think many people could objectively look at that team and think it's a title contender or anything.
Watch them win the championship now.
Yeah. That'd be pretty cool for DeMar DeRozan, but I don't see it happening.
Anyway, please, you said for the Nicholas Batum deal and Andrew Wiggins, I guess if you're Charlotte and you know you're going to sign Kemba Walker for 5 years and you're that committed, yeah. But is Andrew Wiggins better right now than Nicholas Batum? And I'm going to preface this by saying Nicholas Batum is second to last on the Charlotte Hornets in shot attempts in points per 36 minutes in front of only Bismack Biyombo. That's a scary stat.
I heard something about his usage the other day too, which would coincide with that.
It's right. It's only in front of Bismack on the Hornets, like all that stuff. It's
career low usage. Yeah, I mean he's having a weird season. I'd still say he's probably better than Andrew Wiggins. I think if you're a team that wants to trade for him, you're just talking yourself into potential, and he was never in the right situation. He's still, how old is Andrew Wiggins? He can't be older than like 23. He's 23. So maybe it's a team like, I'm not saying the Nets would be the team, but some team that has the same sort of thinking as the Nets. Let's take a chance on a guy who was a lottery pick. It just didn't pan out where he was. And maybe he needs a different situation, a different coach. I'm not ready to give up on Andrew Wiggins yet. I'm close. But I do think maybe one or two other situations where you could see just some other side of him might be possible.
If you're, I guess objectively right now, if they're going to move him this season, which I don't think that they will, nor do I think they can, is he someone you need to attach a pick to or sweeteners to at this point?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess it depends on if Minnesota's taking a bad or semi-bad contract back.
Well, even if it's let's say it's Chandler Parsons.
You might have to sweeten it for that because his deal is he's on the books for so much longer than Parsons is. I mean, Parsons last deal of his contract is next season, right?
Yep.
So that one's not like that hard to swallow. If you're Minnesota, Wiggins has what, 4 years after this one?
Yep.
That's a pretty drastic difference. So yeah, maybe they do have to attach a sweetener. How much longer is Batum's deal? Is he 2 years after this one?
Yeah, 2 years. He has a player option for 2021 that I'm just going to assume he'll pick up.
I can't see him turning down $27.1 million in 2021. That of all the responses I got, I mean, a lot of people threw out a bunch of other sort of cellar dwellers like the Suns and the Hawks, and those teams make some sense. As
I feel like the Hawks are a little, I don't want to say too smart because I feel like that's insulting, but they're more calculated than to take on Andrew Wiggins' deal for the next 4 or 5 years.
I could see the thinking for a tanking team to do that and just to take a swing on a guy who was a number one pick not too long ago. But the one that I think intrigues me the most is the Charlotte deal. Just because, when was the last time Charlotte signed a big time free agent?
Does Batum count? And they even traded for him. So.
Yeah. I guess they signed Gordon Hayward, right? He wasn't that big at the time, but.
It's not that big now.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. I think there's the potential for more fallout after this Tom Thibodeau firing. I just don't know how likely it is given the contracts that are on the books.
Taj Gibson's probably a buyout candidate at some point now. I'd say he's a trade candidate, but I don't know if the Wolves, we're talking about them trying to get rid of Andrew Wiggins' deal. I don't know if they'd be, he'd be interesting if you're willing to take back long-term salary, but I don't know if they're open to doing that with him. And if they, are they just going to be committed to a rebuild, just some sort of direction right now to where they would want to buy him out or move him? And if they are going to rebuild, I'm just going to say that Robert Covington becomes an interesting name. Probably not towards the trade deadline, unless Minnesota is just full-blown, let's try and get top five pick this year or something. But he's 28. That's not, he's a really good player. Really, really good. Such a good team defender. Can basically defend, you could probably stretch him to four positions, but he does really good against traditional wings and then any sort of guard you want to put him up against. He doesn't need the ball in his hands on the offensive end, can shoot above a league average clip from three. You don't want him putting the ball on the floor too much, but again, he can handle some of the straight line stuff. I would be very interested this summer, or maybe we'll hear his name coming out at the trade deadline, should the Timberwolves start. I don't even know what they're going to have to start doing, because they can play Dario Saric more, and you know they can play Josh Okogie more, and maybe that leads to some losses and puts them in a weird position, but he's a very good player. I just don't know. And his contract is more than reasonable, but is he someone that if you are going to rebuild or start over that you keep, or do you capitalize on his trade value right now? And I'm not giving an opinion here. I don't know what you do one way or the other, because I would see a case for both arguments, since 28 isn't terribly old and his contract is so cheap. But at the same time, does he fit a rebuilding timeline? I would not know. Is that even what the Timberwolves are planning to do after this? That's just something we kind of have to monitor in the weeks and months, I guess, to come.
Yeah, I think they're going to be an interesting team to monitor. You want to hear something crazy that I just did?
Always.
When I looked up Batum's contract while we were talking about him, I noticed that he's played 10 seasons already, and through those 10 seasons, ending in last season, he had made $94.9 million. Over the next three seasons, his career earnings is going to go from $94.9 million to $171.7 million.
Good for him. Get that bag.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's just incredible. Deals these days are wild.
Anything, do you have any thoughts on the Covington thing for Minnesota?
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I don't know if he necessarily fits a, like, blow it up and build from scratch timeline. I guess we'll see over the next couple, or I guess it's down to a month now, between now and the trade deadline.
To the day as we record this.
Oh, wow. So we'll get a little bit clearer picture about what their thinking is over the next month. I do think, like you said, I think he's a good player, and I think he could be a good fit next to Towns and even Wiggins. If they end up keeping Wiggins, then he's a good guy who can cover for some of Wiggins' defensive issues. But he certainly doesn't fit the same timeline that 23-year-old Towns and 23-year-old Wiggins are on. So he'll be a name to monitor for sure.
Jeff Teague, I guess, too. Derrick Rose is going to have to find a new home after this year.
Yeah, he almost certainly will. Teague is interesting, too, just because Tyus Jones has been pretty good for them off the bench for the last 2 years.
Now they have to ask, not that it was an easy question before, but if they're not going to fancy themselves playoff hopefuls leading into next season, do you pay him? And if you're not going to pay him, should you look at moving him now?
Who, Teague?
No, Tyus Jones.
Oh.
Entering restricted free agency.
Obviously,
would be Teague picks up his $19 million player option.
If I had to like sum it up, I would say that there can't be anybody other than Towns who's like untouchable at this point, right?
Yeah, I would probably agree with you there.
He's the guy that you – he still has the potential to be one of the best bigs ever. I mean, I think we've grown kind of numb to what he's done over the course of his first 4 years. You don't see big guys put up numbers like his too often anymore. 22, 12, almost three assists a game for his career. He's almost up to two blocks a game this season, which is encouraging. Hits over a three a game, almost a 39% three-point shooter. his numbers are insane. And he's only 23 years old. So you got to do whatever you can to keep him happy and build a team that works around him. But other than that, I think everybody should be fair game.
I am 100% with you there. The other thing that happened, actually, maybe we should go here first. The Minnesota Timberwolves' former player, Jimmy Butler, just before the weekend started.
Yeah.
This is per Adrian Wojnarowski and Ramona Shelbourne. He has communicated his unhappiness to the Sixers head coach Brett Brown with his role and how he's being used with the Sixers. He wants to get more ISOs and run more pick and rolls, was in the report, which is funny because someone tweeted this out. If you go back to his introductory press conference, he was talking about how there's other ways for him to get the ball than running pick and roll and ISOs, like getting offensive rebounds, cutting, and things like that. So it was just kind of a complete 180 there. Do you make any? And the other thing in that report that I found more interesting than Butler being or Butler talking to the Sixers about his role was that now teams kind of expect him to take meetings over the summer in free agency. And everyone was and still is just assuming that Butler is going to re-sign with the 76ers after that deal. It would be catastrophically bad for the Sixers if he does not. Imagine if he just walks now. And I don't think things are at that point just because the Sixers aren't bad. They're still fighting for a home court advantage spot in the East. But if he's going to take meetings in free agency, if they're unable to just find that perfect fit or strike a balance within the awkwardness that exists between Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid functionally, there are now so many questions about this franchise when you look at Markelle Fultz. Maybe how are they going to use their cap space this summer? Do they have another trade in them? And if Jimmy Butler were to leave, it would just be, I don't even know what to make of it. I would still, my guesstimate would be that he returns to Philly, but I think this is interesting in the sense that now it's definitely something to monitor. If he's already unhappy when we're, you know, less than 2 months into his Sixers tenure.
Do you remember when when all the drama was still happening with him in Minnesota at the beginning of the season? I was pretty skeptical of him on any team. he seems like he's been a malcontent for 2 or 3 years now. I don't remember if it started before this, but there was certainly the issues in Chicago with him and Dwayne Wade versus like all the young guys in Rondo. Then there's obviously the issues in Minnesota for 2 seasons there, or like just over one, little over 1 season there. And then within, like you said, like within a month or two, it starts up in Philly. It's just crazy. Somebody tweeted something like right after that news broke that Jimmy Butler carries himself like a 4-time champion, 4-time MVP or something. And I guess good for him to be that confident in himself, but it has not benefited his teams really over the last few years. I mean, statistically, all the teams that he's been on have been much better when he plays because he's a very, very good player. But he's now blown up, and I'm not going to say he's blown up Philly's locker room yet, but he blew up Minnesota, he blew up Chicago. he has the potential of blowing up 3 locker rooms in the course of 3 or 4 years. And yeah, Philly would be in some serious trouble if he did leave, but if he's a long-term part of their future, I think they're just going to continue to have chaos there. If he re-signs long-term, I don't think it would. People are already talking about Ben Simmons being traded, which is crazy to me. That noise will become a lot louder if Jimmy Butler signs an extension with the Sixers or signs a new deal with the Sixers. I just think there's going to be a lot of drama wherever he goes for the next, I don't know, 3 or 4 years of his career.
I don't know how you looked at the potential fit with the Sixers and thought that he would be able to get those types of touches in volume.
If
you're Jimmy Butler, this shouldn't come as a surprise. I know some people have been critical about how Brett Brown is using everybody, but it's really tough when you're just looking. Let's just look at the minutes they play together. And this has been talked about ad nauseum. How do you have Jimmy Butler on the ball at all? Because you don't really know what to do with Ben Simmons when he's off the ball just yet. He's not the hardest cutter to the basket, and he doesn't really move around a ton off the ball at all. And Joel Embiid isn't really shooting. He shoots from three-point range, and I guess that helps. But do you put Ben Simmons in the post? Joel Embiid runs high pick and roll with Jimmy Butler. And even then, now you know Embiid has to pop. It's not going to be a situation where he's going to dive to the basket. This just shouldn't be a surprise to him. I don't think the Sixers have necessarily done anything wrong here. It shouldn't be a surprise to Butler if this is, in fact, how he feels. Maybe you can carve out more me time for him where he's by himself. Right now, per Cleaning the Glass, he's only played 28 possessions without Simmons and Embiid on the floor. But you look at Embiid, you just look at that balance. That's probably why would you ever want one of these guys on the floor by themselves at any point? So,
about this? Right now, Jimmy Butler is taking 20.8 field goal attempts per 100 possessions with the Sixers and 6.6 free throw attempts. His previous three seasons, he was taking 21.6 field goal attempts per 100 possessions. So not far off there, but he was taking 10.6 free throw attempts. So two extra trips to the line, about one extra shot. So all he needs is three more possessions over the course of the game. It's an interesting thing to throw a fit about, especially when you're on a team that has more talent than he's had over the last few years. I just don't know what he wants to be happy. I guess he wants to be Kobe Bryant and be able to take like 20 to 25 shots a game and,
I'm sorry, I've heard that name way too much this season, all of a sudden. Austin Rivers using Kobe to compare to what James Harden's doing lately. Yeah. Jason Tatum shot selection at the beginning of the season. We need to let it go. Kobe's gone. I hate talking about Kobe. Let's move on.
You know what's funny is James Harden statistically has been way better than Kobe's ever was at any point in his career. But that's a different discussion. Anyway, I don't know really what's going to make Jimmy Butler happy at this point. Because I think if he gets what he wants, where he is like the unquestioned number one guy, gets as many ISOs and pick and rolls as he wants, plays for this tough, hard-nosed team, it's not going to be a very good team. I don't think he's a number one on a title-winning team. So I just don't know what he really wants.
So here's what's interesting, too. Is that so when he was with Minnesota this season, Jimmy Butler's touch time, 43.3% of his shot attempts came while holding the ball between 2 and 6 seconds. That number with the Sixers, 44.3%. So 44.3% of his shots are coming while holding the ball between 2 and 6 seconds. More of his touches are coming under when he has the ball for under 2 seconds. And fewer are coming when he has it for 6+ seconds. And so he is, I guess, in that sense, sort of holding the ball less. But he hasn't – his shot distribution hasn't changed so drastically. And it's, as you pointed out with the shots, now it's clearly about how his shots are coming and not necessarily the volume then.
Yeah.
And that's – I don't want to say that's a weird thing, but when people – talk about that, it just proves that there is this aesthetic, this egotistical value to how you're used on offense. It's not just about the number of shots. It's not just about the points being scored, and it's not just about then in that sense winning. Although maybe if the Sixers are, if they're 23-4 instead of 18-9 since the trade, are you hearing this from Butler? I don't know. But that's just interesting to look at because his shots are – it's not like he's holding the ball too much less. Yes, he's tasked more with – his catch-and-shoot numbers, his frequency isn't even up by that much. So he is doing there's that aspect of, yes, I have the ball less at points compared to when I was really allowed to like ground and pound it in Minnesota. But it's not like he just doesn't have the ball ever in Minnesota.
That's true. And I don't think anybody should be holding the ball for more than 6 seconds.
The Mike D'Antoni Phoenix Suns would agree.
Yeah, but not the Mike D'Antoni Rockets.
No, not at all. who are all of a sudden good now too, the Rockets. James Harden, a lot of people have him as their MVP favorite, and I really can't argue there. I'd probably still put Giannis just looking at the entire season's body of work. But
yeah, I was going to say, do you have him first? Because I think I still have Giannis.
I do too, just because it's an entire body of work thing. And you know how you're talking about how we're numb to Karl-Anthony Towns? I feel like we're at that point with Giannis Antetokounmpo, and because he hasn't had that trademark stretch and has just been doing this all season, it's almost hurting him than if James Harden has used the past, you know, definitely the past 8 Chris Paulless games, but over the last month or something, as the Rockets have climbed up the standings to really build his case. And he could catch Giannis in the end. I'm not ruling that out. He's certainly a close second for me right now. But the Bucks have been, yeah, they did just lose to the Raptors, but the Bucks have been doing what they're doing really all season, and he hasn't dealt with his own personal cold streak or anything like that. So he's still first for me. And the defensive value matters as well, I think, too.
I think he's pretty comfortably first for me. That ranking thing that I do where I rank everybody by the 8 catch-alls, the only person he's behind right now is Anthony Davis. And you can't I still can't really wrap my head around an MVP being on a sub-500 team. I know that's like kind of archaic.
Well, to be fair, so I was writing about this leading into the weekend. There have only been 2 MVPs that have come from teams with losing records. It was Kareem in 75-76 and Bob Pettit in 1955-56. And both of their teams posted a higher winning percentage than the New Orleans Pelicans have now.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
So there's point differentials to consider and stuff, but just by record, Anthony Davis would, if he won the MVP, would come from the worst team
precedent
in the history of MVP winners.
Yeah. And I don't think Giannis is far off what Davis is doing. I posted a stat the other day that
you posted a stat.
his scoring average right now is higher than Tim Duncan's career high. His rebounding average is higher than Karl Malone's career high, and his assist average is higher than Kobe Bryant's career high. Sorry to bring up Kobe Bryant again.
Honestly, about to sign off.
But his overall numbers are insane. So in addition to that, he's also averaging like a block and a half and a steal and a half a game, to go back to your point on what he does defensively. He's just been remarkable this season. Listen to this James Harden number, though. I looked this up right when we started this conversation. Over his last 10 games, he is attempting 15.9 threes per game. And listen to this, 14.8 threes per game that are pull-up threes.
That's absurd.
14.8 pull-up threes per game. That's unbelievable.
Greg Popovich just vomited.
I want to see now I want to see like what the team that leads the NBA in pull-up threes per game is averaging. So take the Rockets out of the equation. Can you guess what the second highest team in pull-up threes per game is?
Overall for the season or just during the stretch?
Overall for the season. I'll give you a hint. Step back.
Oh, the Mavericks.
Yeah. Dallas Mavericks, 10.7 per game.
Wow.
And Harden is taking 14.8 over the last 10 games or whatever.
That's fantastic.
For the entire season, Harden is at 11.5. So even over the whole season, he's taking more per game than the number 2 team in the NBA.
Well, then.
That's absurd. I don't know if that really lends itself to his MVP case, but what he's doing is
He's taking ridiculous shots. I think he's shooting like a zillion percent on those pull-up threes.
Well, yeah, and he is like that's a good point. Over the course of the season, his percentage on those pull-ups is 38.9 on those 11.5 attempts. If I go back to the last 10 games, it's 41.9% on 14.8 attempts.
That is crazy.
So look, the 15 possessions out of a game that has roughly 100 possessions, and you are getting math here. Jeez.
This is some really just impromptu. We did not have a James Harden conversation scheduled for this podcast, as you can most definitely tell.
I'm like drawing a blank right now. How many points is he generating on those? So 6.2 threes per game. He's generating almost 20 points on those pull-up attempts.
Your computer agrees.
It's just absurd what he's doing right now. I think I still probably take Giannis, but like you said, the gap is closing.
He's coming there, and it's just, I know Chris Paul's injured, but having him is supposed to lighten James Harden's workload, and instead, it's never been heavier. His usage rate was, maybe it dropped over the weekend, but I checked it before the weekend. No, it actually went up. His 39 usage rate is now the second highest in NBA history.
Jeez.
There's no way that's what Houston had in mind when they traded and then re-signed Chris Paul.
No.
And the other thing that's crazy is his true shooting percentage is just, it's almost 62, and he's on pace to win another scoring title. So he definitely can. People are saying this stretch is unsustainable and he's not going to average over 40 points per game forever. Though I did look this up, and which was kind of fun. He now has as many 40-point games this season as Paul George and Kevin Love have for their careers.
Wow. That's crazy.
It's an arbitrary random stat, but I found it just hysterical. And he's going to be the league leader in active players in 40-point games by the end of the season. LeBron right now is at 64. Harden is second with 60.
Wow. Here's the thing I was trying to look up earlier. So on those 14.8 pull-ups per game that he's had over the last 10 games, so roughly 15 possessions out of 100, roughly like 15% of the game. Houston's offensive rating on those possessions is 125.7.
That seems good.
it's just crazy. Last thing on this too, his game winner the other night against the Warriors, that shot was unreal.
Almost as unreal as that call about Kevin Durant not being out of bounds.
Oh, gosh, yeah, that too.
I'm actually surprised your Twitter account wasn't angrier that night.
I was getting ready to go to sleep. And I thought, the last time I checked up on that game, I thought Golden State had it. It was getting around time where it would end, and I thought, I'll just check Twitter, see what happened. And it was blowing up with all the videos of Kevin Durant being 2 feet out of bounds, and then there was the game winner. That was a unimaginable missed call. I mean, people complain about refs in the NBA a lot. That one was very, very warranted. That was crazy.
It was bad.
It was.
To get back to the James Harden front, though, that shot that you're talking about, do you remember when Russell Westbrook hit that game winner against Denver in 2016-2017?
That wounded my soul.
That felt like his Omni-MVP moment, that he was going to win the award. This is way earlier, because that game had far more stakes attached to it, but that's what it felt like for Harden, kind of. And he still wouldn't be my vote, but that's what that shot felt like.
Oh, if he wins MVP, that's going to be on all the highlight reels for sure.
I mean, I guess unless he does it again, we're not even halfway through the season, so who knows what he's going to do at this point. But it's amazing, because I don't think let's go back 3 weeks, maybe even a month, maybe even just 2 weeks. Is he even top five on your MVP ballot?
No, not before this stretch started.
Yeah,
it was. I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, it was probably Giannis, Anthony Davis, because the Pelicans were a little bit better. And LeBron was probably there. Jokic was in the conversation for a little bit. Remember when Barkley said that he was playing MVP-level basketball? Right now, it seems like it's a two-man race between Harden and Antetokounmpo, though.
It does seem like it's there. Do you know what I found? And I'm not using this as a case against Harden. But on the season, the Rockets are basically – his net rating differential is just basically dead even.
You know what's weird is
– it is still dead – wait, no, it's not dead even. I used the filter wrong. But it was dead even heading into the weekend, and now they are – overall, they're actually 0.9 points per 100 possessions better when he's off the court. That comes with the caveat. I'm not this again. I found it interesting. Since Chris Paul has been out, they are 6.8 points better per 100 possessions with him on the court. So,
one interesting thing about him is for the last two or three years, his net rating swing has not been as good as you would think it would be. I mean, generally, guys that are in the MVP conversation are shifting their team's net rating by like 10 points,
right,
or something around there. For the last three seasons, at least on Basketball Reference, his net rating swing is 3.7, which is still good, but it's just not like Giannis right now has got to be in double digits, or at least, he definitely was last season.
He is. What would you say if I told you he was not in double digits?
Oh, he is not. I just looked him up too.
4.5.
That goes to Milwaukee being so much better this season. So that's maybe not as much of a feather in Giannis's cap as I thought it would be. But yeah, interestingly enough, Harden's is not quite as dramatic as you would expect.
Can you, of the MVP conversation, can you name, pick who would be, who has the highest net rating differential among them? Because I have it here, and I think the name, my guess is the name might surprise you.
I think the last time I checked, Davis's was pretty big, so I'll just say him.
No, he is fourth.
Ah.
Do you care to take another stab at it?
I don't think it's LeBron, because his was pretty close for a while. It's not Jokic, because his has not been as dramatic as it's been in years past.
Look at you doing the process of elimination.
I can't think of who else it would be. I'm going to have to let you tell me.
Paul George.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I would not have guessed that.
The Thunder are 16.3 points per 100 possessions better this season with him on the floor.
Ooh. I'm glad you brought him up, because he's an MVP candidate too.
He is. I did an MVP ladder at Bleacher Report that went live, I think, on Friday. I have Paul George as number four on my ballot behind Anthony Davis, who I feel like you can't put him one or two because the Pelicans are bad. Or I don't want to say bad, but they're not great. But he's just so dominant in the individual category that how do you not put him in the top three? And so it's safe because top three doesn't win. And then I have Harden at number two and Giannis number one. There's a chance. I think Paul George can obviously catch Davis. The Harden thing is interesting because it really just depends on whether he cools off, how much he cools off by, where the Rockets are. But he could end up, in my book, he could end up being top three on the ballot.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Oh, and number two, I'm just going to throw this out there because Kevin Durant had the lead in the net rating argument, by the way, heading into the weekend. He's number two right now, which surprised me.
Yeah, that surprises me too.
And Joel Embiid, for anyone who cares, is number three. He has an interesting MVP case as well. Anthony Davis, by the way, this is per 36 minutes. This is kind of, it's another arbitrary stat, but I like it. Per 36 minutes, he's averaging more points than Damian Lillard, more rebounds than Karl Anthony Towns, more assists than Donovan Mitchell, more steals than Giannis Antetokounmpo, and more blocks than Rudy Gobert.
That is crazy.
Just a one-man tour de force.
Yeah, I mean, he's insane. Tour de force, Woj over there.
That might have been one of my favorite Woj tweets of all time.
Yeah, that was incredible. Speaking of Jimmy Butler.
Yes. I did want to ask if you had any thoughts on the – we kind of touched on it with the Timberwolves thing, and I know you had something about the Cavaliers you wanted to get to, but the Chandler Parsons situation in Memphis – per Woj and Tim McMahon over at ESPN.com, the Grizzlies and Parsons have parted ways and they're working towards a resolution for his situation. The Grizzlies apparently view his expiring contract next season over the summer as a potential trade chip. And so that kind of puts a buyout off the table if they're along those lines. So right now they're trying to find a solution via trade, which I think is going to be difficult. That, or they want Parsons to go to the G League to, not as a rehab assignment, but basically as a tryout for the Grizzlies to see whether he could be put back in the rotation.
Yeah.
So Do you think he's, I guess, as you pointed out before, his deal comes off the books after next year. Do you think he's movable, or does it have to be, is it only movable in the sense that it would have to be like an Andrew Wiggins type trade? And even there, we talked about how the Timberwolves might have to include a sweetener, but at that point they have to be committed to selling Wiggins instead of viewing him as a, as an asset.
Yeah. That's an interesting situation. I think I saw some debate on Twitter last night about whether it was a rehab assignment or a tryout, but I mean, if it was posed to him as a tryout, or if he interpreted it as a tryout, then I could understand his frustration. I mean, that's a guy that's getting paid a ton of money. If it's a rehab assignment, I think that's kind of run of the mill at this point. So it's obviously that's like a semantics thing. But like you said before we started recording, Memphis is just kind of a mess right now. I don't know. I think obviously his trade value goes up over the offseason when he's all of a sudden an expiring contract instead of, you know, a year and a half left on this deal. You have no idea how long he can play, whether he can even play. The last couple times he's come back, he's looked good for stretches, and then he just he can't play anymore.
Right.
Last season, I remember, we were cautiously optimistic about the Grizzlies for the first – few games. That bench unit with Chandler Parsons and Tyreke Evans was really, really good. And then he just, you know, stuff flared up for him again, and all of a sudden he couldn't play. So I don't think any team is going to trade for him thinking that he's going to play, at least not a lot. So that complicates his trade value right there. He becomes sort of a he's just like a money piece of a trade. It's kind of like you're saying, maybe it's something like the Wiggins deals that we kicked around earlier. I don't know how any team can trade for him expecting to get like a rotation player at this point. He's just an expiring contract. Which is sad, but I think he's reached that point in his career. Some guys come back from these prolonged injury riddled stretches. Like Grant Hill didn't play really much at all for I don't know how long his issues went on. He was basically hurt from 2000-2001 through 2003-04, really through 2005-06, for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 seasons. He played 135 games, so just over 20 games a season. He's an exception, though. There aren't many guys who go through 6 years of being injury plagued and then all of a sudden are, you know, on the court for 82 games again. You would hope for the best for something like that for Chandler Parsons, but generally speaking, when you've had injury problems, as varied as his are and as long as his are, it's hard to get back on the floor consistently.
Yeah. And the other thing with his contract, too, is what makes it problematic. So we talked about the Wiggins thing. And if there's a deal out there that's long-term that you're looking to get off of that money beyond next season, then maybe there's a road to an agreement. But if you look at – let's look at the Nicholas Batum case. Yes, Chandler Parsons comes off the books a year earlier, but he's not saving you any money for next season. And so now you're trading someone who you could actually play for – I think he's making, in that scenario, about – $500,000 less than Nicholas Batum. So if you're a team that wants to compete next season, that's not really actually helping you because it's not creating appreciable cap room. And so it puts you in this weird situation where unless you're taking back that or targeting a team that has those super long-term goals. And I don't know that there's a team out there, or more specifically, I don't know if there's a contract out there that fits that bill. Wiggins would come the closest, would it not? I mean, maybe if the Miami Heat had some foresight, you could package Dion Waiters and James Johnson together if they didn't want to pay them. They both have 2 years left on their deal, so maybe they're looking at it as, well, we could get by even if Chandler Parsons doesn't play, and then we're going to have extra money for the summer of 2020 now. Maybe, but it doesn't seem like there's that situation out there for them or that contract out there for them to target as a vessel of a Chandler Parsons trade, unless I'm forgetting anyone right off the bat. I mean, we could go to the Wizards deals, but I don't even think that they're not that desperate to get off of an Otto Porter.
No, nor should they be. Grizzlies would be interesting, I guess. for Andrew Wiggins. We've already talked about this. I think that
just more so trying to spot what is the other.
Yeah, where to go with Chandler Parsons?
Because I don't even like we maybe Batum because there was that report. I found this hysterical, by the way, from Sporting News' Sean Devini that the Hornets want to trade Nicholas Batum, and they want that, but they're also willing to trade Frank Kaminsky, but they want people to take on Batum if they're going to get Kaminsky. And I was like, oh,
and Kaminsky doesn't really carry that value right now, Charlotte.
No.
Yeah, it's hard to find a destination for Chandler Parsons. I think if they're going to trade him, they're probably going to have to attach assets, and he's going to end up going to some team like Phoenix or something,
right?
Where he just doesn't even play. I mean, as sad as it is, I think that's kind of where he's headed.
I am with you there. You had a, before we get out of here, you had some, we don't talk about the Cavaliers enough on this podcast. You had an interesting number before we started. The one thing I will say about the Cavs, though, is I saw on, I don't know if I was reading something or was on Twitter, but people calling for them to play the young guys more. And I don't really understand what that means. I don't think they've been playing the wrong players at this point. So I just didn't understand what was being said there. I mean, here are their top five players in minutes per game since December 1st. Chetty Osman, Colin Sexton, Tristan Thompson, Alec Burks, and Larry Nance Jr. And if you look at the players behind them, there's Jordan Clarkson, Rodney Hood, Matthew Dellavedova, Jaren Blossom game, Patrick McCaw for a minute. That was really funny. Unless you're like a big Ante Zizic fan, or you think that David Nwaba, when he's healthy, is the future of this team somehow, I don't know what the complaints are, is just my point.
They must just want Colin Sexton to play 48 minutes a game.
Yeah.
Secure the tank. We talked about MVP candidates earlier. We didn't talk a whole lot about LeBron James, but the Lakers are kind of a mess without him. And then I was looking at Cleveland's simple rating system the other day, which is just point differential plus strength of schedule. There are 1,513 teams in Basketball Reference's team season finder. Right now, Cleveland's SRS ranks 1,502nd.
Seems low.
Only 11 teams in NBA history were worse. The only team since 2000 that were worse, the 2014 76ers, the beloved 2014 process 76ers, the 2000 Clippers, and the 2012 Bobcats. So speaking of MVP candidates, the Lakers are a mess without LeBron, and just the Cavaliers, my goodness. I think I was one of those people who was like cautiously optimistic that they could get 30 to 35 wins this season. And maybe I was factoring in Kevin Love playing a whole season, but even with him, I can't imagine they would have been pushing for 35 wins. I mean, they are a train wreck without LeBron. It's just been an historically bad season for them.
And it's better to be bad so that you're going to improve your lottery odds. But this is where the lottery rule changes start to matter, though, because look at the odds for the worst five teams in the league. 14%, 14%, 14% for the teams with the three worst records. So right there, if you're Cleveland and we're going to assume that they'll keep the NBA's worst record, you're in a three-way tie for chance of getting the number one overall pick. Fourth worst record, 12.5%. Fifth worst record, 10.5%. That's super close. I mean, you could even throw right now the Wizards, who have the sixth worst record, have a 9% chance at the number one pick if the lottery started today. And that's, there's no guarantee there.
It's pretty, that's an interesting, imagine if the team with like the seventh or eighth worst record right now got Zion Williamson. What if New Orleans got Zion Williamson?
That would be funny. The only thing is that their other best players are these front court guys.
Yeah, that's true. They'd probably have to trade Mirotić or Randall. Well, I guess Randall's on an expiring contract. Both of them are, right?
So, and that's the problem for them is then what do you do? Okay, great. We have Zion. I guess you can go with the cap space route at that point. But that's also, if you're the Pelicans and people are talking about if things get bad enough, maybe they should trade Anthony Davis this season. When you look at the teams that are in play for the number one overall pick this year, Washington, New York, Chicago, even Cleveland, if they decide to hang on to Kevin Love, I'm waiting. Even if Anthony Davis says, I want out, I'm waiting to see if anyone who wins the lottery is going to build a package around the number one pick. Because yeah, the other offers are still going to be there. And right now, you're not even going to get an offer from the Celtics. So your field of offers is only going to improve over the summer, probably.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That was a weird tangent. But there, you're right. I didn't even think about the Pelicans aspect. They have a 6% chance. It's the 8th best odds. But it's not – when you're just looking at – having the worst record no longer carries this cachet. Yeah. And I get that it still matters. But when you're actually watching the team or you're a fan of the team and you're going through the losing and people are just saying, well, this is what they need to do. When you know that the reward might not be worth the trade-off of that season or as much, it's probably a lot more difficult to stomach.
Well, think of it this way. You could have the worst record in the NBA and you still have an 86% chance to not get the number one pick.
Yeah, I think that's how you have to look. Their most likely scenario is they have a 52.1% chance of having a top four pick.
But even that's not, I mean, the lottery odds, this conversation is like, for the last several months, I thought it wasn't that dramatic of a change, but I'm having like an epiphany right now.
I mean, let's say you're a Knicks fan. As of right now, there's a 51.9% chance that you won't have a top four pick.
Yeah, that's crazy. On the sim I just did on Tankathon, though, they end up with number two. So you are welcome for that.
Do you want to have my pre-draft hot take? If I have the number two pick and Zion Williamson's gone, I'm taking Cam Reddish.
I don't really love RJ Barrett either. I mean, I probably haven't watched him enough, but he's in college and he's scoring like 22 points on 19 shots. I need a little bit more efficiency out of my
speaking potential. Of Kobe.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, that's a great way to bring it back. anything else we want to hit on today?
No, the lottery race is all of a sudden just, it's not all of a sudden, but it's just going to be very interesting to the actual lottery is just going to have incredible ramifications.
Yeah. I'm all of a sudden like way more excited about that. Last two sims I did on Tankathon gave the Knicks the number one pick though. So you'll be happy to know that.
So look, if they end up with Zion or Cam, I'll be fine. That's all that needs to happen. And that's clearly based on what you just did. That's the most likely outcome.
That's what's going to happen. And until next time, as always, we implore, beg of you, encourage you to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. If you've already done those things, share it with your friends, share it with your family, share it with the random person that you're sitting next to on the subway or the bus or in your commute to work. Just
any celebrities you might know.
Yeah, just in general, get people subscribing to Hardwood Knox because you know it'll brighten their lives, not just their days. It will literally brighten their lives. Until next time, we leave you with the shout out to Benno Udry and Kyle Anderson. And I forgot the Twitter handles. Dan's at Dan Favalli. I'm at Andrew D. Bailey. The show's at Hardwood Knox. Sponsors at NB_Math. This was the most scattered ending I've had in a while, but that's probably appropriate given our break.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed-rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed-rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.